Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. But those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace. Welcome, Morris and Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana Elbay. And this evening, we are dealing with the administrative process on the public side and the private side. I will also get into an actual administrative process that I'm personally currently involved in with the Transportation Security Administration involving an incident at the airport in July. And I have received a response from them in the form of letters, but no rebuttal to the actual affidavit that and presentment that was sent to them. However, after reading this information, it appears that they are attempting to, since I presented them with a legitimate wrongdoing and proof and evidence and of the law and all this stuff, I'm being regarded as a terrorist. Okay, and in the information that has been sent to me, but no rebuttal of the initial affidavit, which was my informal request. We're going to deal with what is an administrative process? How does it work on the private side? How does it work in the public? Why do an administrative process in the first place? And I'm going to start with the answer to that question. An administrative process is a lawful process whereby you are seeking remedy informally. This is an informal attempt to settle a matter prior to ever going into any courtroom. And you want to perform this type of process and make every lawful attempt to get the problem settled before ever going into a courtroom, and unless you just don't have any other recourse other than to go in there. But you always want to go in as a creditor and not a debtor. And we're going to be looking at both sides today. We got some information that we're going to recite to you. We also have some audio plugs from clearly describing an administrative process on the public side. Okay? I need you to hold on for just a second, and we'll be right back, and we will be ready to go.
Okay, everybody, to Hawker Archives, Master Library is up and running again. For those of you who have gotten a hold of Tahaka's Archive Master Library, go ahead and either give me a call or forward me your donation ticket back to Tahaka53@hotmail.com, and we'll get that thing to you. Also, for those of you who have not accessed this powerful library, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. Click on the donation page up top, and you'll see a complete listing of the packages and stuff that we offer. And, of course, Talk Archive Master Library is now officially listed, and we're back up and running. Okay? Peace.
All right, we're back. We will start with the actual my actual personal affidavit so you can see how this thing is done. This is an affidavit. It's structured in affidavit format, and it's directed at a personal individual that is the director of the Transportation Security Administration. The address is listed, the city and state and zip code is there. It starts off by simply saying this is an informal attempt to settle a matter that occurred on or about July 11th at about 6:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at Jacksonville International Airport. I walked into Jackson International and presented the baggage clerk my bags and identification for my ticket that had been purchased the day before online. My bag was paid for and my ID was checked by the clerk and my ticket for flight was printed out. I was given directions to pass the security checkpoint. When I arrived at TSA security, I presented the private contractor, and his name is in parentheses here, which I won't call, my ID for boarding my flight to Dallas, Texas. My ID was passed on to another private contractor, I won't mention his name, who held me up and walked away with my ID. I collected the names and phone numbers of several witnesses who have agreed to testify in court. They also were outraged at this act of discrimination. The gentleman returned and informed me that I could not board my flight and that my ID was insufficient. See Exhibit A1, which is a copy of my world passport, which displays all necessary information, a photograph of me, my name, my signature, which is the only thing that anybody ever needs. It's just an identification. When I asked for a higher supervisor, another supervisor came forward and informed me that my ID was illegal and that I would not be allowed to board the plane. And this is the question that I'm asking to the director. Sir, could you please provide proof of claim that these acts were in line with the supreme law of the Constitution of the United States Republic? Then I go on and it says this affidavit of specific constructive notice. Please respond or rebut the following points by point and line by line in an affidavit form and provide documentary evidence to support your claim. Point one, the title on my passport, ID, date of birth, photo, and executorship located on page 6 were all visible. The title listed on my ticket was listed in all capital letters, indicating I was property belonging to someone else, chattel, slave, corporation, corpse, person, etc. See Exhibit A2 and A3. If this is incorrect, sir, please provide proof to the contrary. Point two, I was denied the opportunity to board my flight, and this has caused a serious problem for me and my guests in Dallas, Texas, who travel across the United States to Dallas in an attempt to hear and watch me teach law. Some came in from California, Houston, Austin, Arizona. We all suffered a great loss in revenue through hotel, transportation, and other losses, which they are all willing to testify and to seek recovery for their loss, revenue, and time. If you do not agree, sir, please provide constitutional proof. Point three, in my opinion, it was uncalled for. I am a well-loved man and host an online radio broadcast that teach contract law, civil law, political science, canon law, and other forms of law. I also reserve the right to engage other agencies of interest. See Exhibit A8, which is a blast letter. I feel that my human rights have been violated. See Exhibit A4, Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Highlighted Article 2, Article 3, Article 4, Article 8, Article 13, Article 19, Article 21, and Article 26. I reserve the right to seek recovery of damages in the amount of $200 million in damages. If rights were not violated, sir, please provide proof. Point 4. The two private contractors acted inappropriately in making a judgment involving my identification. I am asking for the removal as employees from the Transportation Security Administration. My reason being, there is no excuse for not knowing the law as spelled out in the Constitution of the United States involving life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Furthermore, I reserve the right to seek recovery of damages from these two private contractors through placement of UCC lien to all held assets, home, content, cars, trucks, boats, bonds, insurance, and all other held assets, including cash, silver, and gold in their private capacity, all rights reserved without prejudice, UCC 1-207-308. Point 5. In my opinion, I feel that I and my guests waiting for me in Dallas are victims of public policy masquerading as law, which is not law. There have been many Supreme Court rulings involving a man or woman's right to travel, which is a fundamental God-given right. The United States operate on a continuous series of contracts under what is commonly known as contract law. Every man has the right to create his own contracts and enforce them. My idea is my contract used for my own contractual purposes issued by the World Services Authority. If this is incorrect constitutionally, sir, please provide proof of claim to the contrary. Point 6. Furthermore, I was informed by the baggage clerk that the airport could not refund the price of my ticket or baggage fee. Furthermore, I reserved the right to recover damages for the deprivation of my lawful purchase in the amount of $264.50 and an additional $25 for baggage handling. See Exhibit A5. All correspondence in regards to this affidavit must be in writing and rebutted by lawful affidavit written within 14 days. Now, I'm going to stop there because I go on to see point 7, point 8, point 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and let's see here what else we got on here. Let's see how further we go with this right here. On number 13, let's see, we go up to point 14, and we stop at, this is a 14-point affidavit, and I state, once again, the affidavit is to be followed point by point, line by line. The United States and state government officials, all United States and state government officials, are hereby put on notice that I expect them to have recorded valid oaths of office in accordance with the U.S. Constitution, Articles 4, the senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and the several states, shall be bound by oath of affirmation to support this Constitution. I understand that by the oaths of office and all U.S. and state government officials are contractually bound by the U.S. Constitution and formulated by its framers and not as interpreted, subverted, or corrupted by the U.S. Supreme Court or other courts. According to the Ninth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage other retained by the people, and the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by its states are reserved to the states, respectively, or to the people. Thus, my understanding from the amendments is that the powers of the U.S. and the state government officials are limited to these superficially granted, specifically granted by the U.S. Constitution. I further understand that any laws, statutes, ordinances, regulations, rules, procedures contrary to the U.S. Constitution as written by its framers are null and void and expressed in the 16th Amendment, Jurisprudence, Second Edition, Section 177. The general misconception is that any statute passed by legislators bearing the appearance of law constitutes the law of the land. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any statute to be valid must be in agreement. It is impossible for both the Constitution and a law violating it to be valid. One must prevail. This is successively stated as follows. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, through having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since unconstitutionally dates from the time of its enactment and not merely from the date of the decision to bearing it an unconstitutional law. In legal contemplation is an inappropriate as if it had never been passed. And I'm going to stop there. But that is just some of what has been put in my initial affidavit to them. And we have gotten a response from them in the form of a letter. My request has not been done properly. And I have a copy of their request. And I'm going to show you what they are, how they attempted to respond in this letter. U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Transportation Security Administration, in address to me, thank you for your letter, July 11, 2014, regarding the Transportation Security Administration procedures for travel document checking, specifically your state that your world government passport was not accepted at the TSA screening checkpoint at Jacksonville International Airport. As a remedy, you request damages in the total amount of $510,289.50 for alleged violations of your human rights, pain and suffering, expenses, and other damages incurred by guests, the cost of your unused airline ticket and the bag handling, as well as other relief. Travel documents checking in, one of the multiple security laws used in conducting screening operations, and is performed to make sure that an individual attempting to enter the screening checkpoint has undergone watch-list matching. When checking travel documents, transportation security officers request an inspect identification, which TSA has determined to be acceptable to verify identity. Unfortunately, the world government passport is not on TSA's list of acceptable ID, which can be found on our public website. Okay. If a passenger does not have an acceptable form of ID, then he or she is allowed to present two other forms of ID. One of these two forms of ID must bear the individual's name and other identifying information, such as photo, address, phone number, social security number, or date of birth. Okay, now I have to stop right here and make something perfectly clear to you. A social security is not a form of identification. A driver's license is not an identification. You have to understand that. This is the law. Okay. And I'm going to stop right there, but this is one of the letters they sent. The second latest letter states, your letter dated July 11, 2014, with exhibits is being construed as a claim against the United States under the Federal Tort Claims Act, FTCA, in the amount of $500,289.50 based on the alleged negligent or wrongful acts or omissions of Transportation Security Administration. personnel. The claim was presented to TSA on August 8, 2014, and forwarded to the TSA Office of Chief Counsel for further handling. If the claim is denied or is not resolved within 6 months after the date presented, you may file suit on the claim in an appropriate U.S. federal district court. Okay, I'm not going to read any more of that, but that's what's going on right now. And so in my opinion, what has taken place is I made a simple request in an informal attempt to settle the matter. I requested that they respond by affidavit. I requested that each point be rebutted point by point, line by line, none of which was done. Then we had an outright falsehood telling me about some appropriate identification. They called a Social Security card an identification. That is not true. A driver's license was requested of me. A state-issued ID was requested of me. What is a state? What are you talking about? So anyway, we go and we're going to deal with this situation now. But before we get into the administrative process on the private side, we're going to deal with it right here on the public side. So y'all hold on, hold tight, and let's get this thing lined up so we'll know how to do this business.
And today,
okay?
We're going
to
talk about administrative remedy. Administrative remedy is writing paperwork without going to court. So you only go to court to settle arguments that you can't settle out of court. You know, the Bible says, fix the problems between you and your brother while you're in the way with him before he drags you to court. So we're going to discuss administrative remedy, which is sending in documentation to get agreements handled without argument. First, we have to have an idea of what are the rules we are working under, or in other words, the law that applies to our commerce or business. Where did commerce come from? People have been doing commerce or business since time began. The Ten Commandments are basically rules of law that apply to the tribe or community for efficient transaction in business and to have the tribe or community continue to be in existence. So we all know, are we going to live as a community and not have rules like thou shalt not kill, or thou shalt not steal? If you go to your California Assemblyperson's office and get a copy of the California Constitution of 1879, and I'm going to show you my copy right here, in it, it starts off with a complete transcription of the Magna Carta of 1215 AD and moves on to the Mayflower Compact of 1620, the Declaration of Rights of 1774, the Declaration of Independence of 1776, the Articles of Confederation of 1778, and the United States Constitution of 1787, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which was our agreement with Spain, and finally the Constitution of the State of California of 1879. The first California Constitution was signed in 1849, so we see that the law is handed down from 1215 Magna Carta, where common law originated. Under common law, everyone has a right to seek punishment against someone who has injured them, and no legislative laws apply because this is only one law, quote, do unto others that which you would not like done unto you. It's simple, the golden rule. The rules of doing business are that you have to have all the elements of a lawful contract to be valid. What are the elements of a lawful contract? One, there has to be a meeting of the minds or full disclosure. Because it is assumed that no one would want to be deceived in a deceitful way in a contract that didn't purport to give him the results he was bargaining for. An example would be if Pete was watching Jim wash his brand new Toyota, and Jim tells Pete he needs money and that he will sell him his Toyota for $5,000. They go in the house and Pete gives Jim $5,000 and Jim hands Pete the keys and the title to his 1982 Toyota Outback instead. The agreement is technically correct, but is a deception as Pete intended to buy the new Toyota and not the old one. Deception makes it an unconscionable contract. The next element necessary for a lawful contract is valuable consideration has to be exchanged. An example of this is Pete hands Jim $5,000, which is valuable assets, in exchange for the new Toyota, which is valuable assets. A promise to pay is a valuable asset. If you don't believe me, consider every time you give someone a check from your bank that is a promise to pay and not payment, because the check isn't money, is it? It's a promise to pay. And they accept that as payment. No businessman ever returns the check as not being acceptable consideration. The third element of a lawful contract is that there has to be two wet ink signatures on the contract. This is the evidence of offer and acceptance and makes the parties liable to be sued. If you don't sign the contract, can you be sued? The case becomes very weak for the party suing. In a verbal contract, both sides agree verbally. But once one party signs for it to be equal, the other party also has to sign. The signature is the evidence of full commercial liability. I mean, you can't deny you put your name to it when it's a wet ink signature, can you? Let's discuss another element of doing business, the element of honor and dishonor. In honor and dishonor, which is as old as time, these are maxims of law that apply to commerce. A maxim is a truth that holds true 100% of the time. If you are accused of something, it is your job to refute it or agree with it. If you fail to speak, you agree with the accusation. I mean, if you're in court and the man next to you is accusing you, says you murdered my brother, and you don't respond to that, it's assumed that it's your duty to respond and protect yourself and defend yourself, and if you don't respond, you're guilty. In honor and dishonor, the party sends you something that is accusatory, such as a lawsuit claiming you have injured him or breached a contract, and you become in dishonor if you don't respond. To stay in honor, you have to respond. Let's give an example of this. The credit card company sends you a statement and requests you pay the statement because it alleges you have a debt of $1,200. If you agree with this, you are happy with the contract, and you send in the payment to set off the minimum amount due, everything's in harmony. But if you disagree with the presentment or offer, because it's an offer, which is what the statement is, in fact, you can remain in honor by responding with an offer or presentment of your own. Let's say you send in a declaration that you believe you owe $1,050. And not $1,200, and would like them to validate their statement that you owe $1,200. This is like a game of tennis. They hit one to you, and you hit one back. Now the ball is in their court. They become in dishonor if they do not respond to your letter. And if they don't respond, then it must be true that you owe them $1,050. The concept of failure to speak equals lose is simple, and we see it in court every day as evidenced by a failure to appear equals you lose. If you're supposed to show up and you fail to appear, the judgment is against you every time. It's not sometimes it's against you every time. Once you have failed to appear or failed to rebut the accusation, you lose the right to rebut the accusation in the future because you've dishonored the court and the accusation. Judgment is final. Unless you can show an element of fraud was involved in the process, and then the fraud would overturn every action that occurs after the fraud. So the credit card company will send you another statement showing all the purchases you have made, hoping you will accept them as proof of your indebtedness to them and you will continue to pay them. This is the administrative remedy we are showing. It is the process of doing business and the making and documenting of evidence to substantiate your position to get justice. Now let's look at a few maxims of law. One, quote, an unrebutted affidavit stands as truth. In this one, it is simply stating that a party's sworn testimony, if it goes unobjected to, is adjudged to be the truth. And not only if it goes unobjected to, but the only way to counter your sworn testimony is with more sworn testimony. So the opposing side has to sign an affidavit. Otherwise, if they're not swearing to something, you're not on equal footing anymore, and sworn testimony is more powerful than unsworn testimony every time. If you state that your next-door neighbor's car is yours and have an affidavit drawn up with that stated on it, will it make it so? No. Why? Because the neighbor can ignore your rantings because you are not in contract with him and there is no agreements between you, so he does not have to recognize you. The credit card company, the IRS, the court system, the mortgage company, etc., all have agreements or contracts with you, and as such are bound by law to have to respond to your rantings. But a private individual with no agreements with you does not. We have to go back to our childhood and remember the rules of engagement. When one kid says, quote, you're a dummy head, that is the offer, and the correct response is, quote, I know you are, but what am I? There is the acceptance and return offer. Like tennis, the ball is back in their court, and failure to respond makes it true. And we see that go on and on and on until someone gets tired of responding, right? Another maxim of law is that, quote, he who leaves the field of battle first loses. And as children, we get that. And we get that when we were kids. Another maxim of law is that, quote, truth is sovereign in commerce. And what does sovereign mean? Sovereign means king or highest power. So truth is the highest power and is superior to lies and deceit.
Okay. All right. There you have it. The first part of an administrative remedy, and we can do this on the public side. And when you're talking about doing it on the private side, it is a good idea if you become all-inclusive with your notary who is occupying and acting as Secretary of State. Here's a hypothetical situation. A few months ago, ABC Agency sent John H. Doe Trust an administrative presentment with a charge of $5,000. It wants or needs $5,000. You are the source, the banker. If you don't give it to them, they will use your dishonor to support a claim to $5,000 worth of trust property. You accepted it for excess value, $5,000. Return it. Give them an authorization to use your credit. Exchange your exemption for the discharge of the charge. Your acceptance is the return of the energy. They receive your authorization, which may have been a bill of exchange, bond, a discharge, or other instrument you choose to use. Now, ABC Agency has hired an attorney to bring charges in the public court against John H. Doe. A summons and complaint was delivered into your hands today. What do you do? One, realize this first. You are in the courtroom on your case. John H. Doe may have removed ABC's case to a different court by filing an amendment complaint requesting judicial review of your administrative process. The purpose of this case is to get a public order that will overcome the claims being made in ABC agencies against John H. Doe. You have to introduce evidence into the judge's file to give him facts upon which he can base his decision. If you are asking for findings to facts, he must have some facts and evidence filed. You don't want the respondent to enter evidence and have his be the only evidence upon which the judge will base his decision. If you want conclusion of law, he must have some law in the evidence file. The only way facts and law get into evidence file, the one the judge keeps in his possession, the clerk's file, you have to introduce it in the open court. County recorder, county assessor, notary public, or other public officer to the bailiff or judge's clerk, who will then hand it to the judge. Have a copy for the attorney also. You do not do this if there is a public defender. You have to introduce some law that supports your request into the record to give him something which to make conclusions of law. Putting this into the complaint as an exhibit and filing it with the clerk and giving notice to the respondent does not get it to the judge's file. More on this part of the administrative process in the later section. Okay? Now, this is something, in my opinion, needs to be studied, and the documentation that I'm coming to you from is a document that I would like for you to have in your possession. It's called Creditors and Their Bonds. For those of you who have not gotten that, you can just send me a friend request. Send me a request for it at Tahaka 53@hotmail.com. That's Tahaka 53@hotmail.com, and I'll send that right to you, and you can study this. This is a very, very powerful document, and it has tons of remedy and examples, definitions of terminology, and everything else is in this thing, so that you will be able to have a tool that you can use to defend yourself, operating on the private side, which are bonds, your A for B, and everything else. It explains this stuff to you, and this is what we're coming to you with this evening. Now, you see how that part goes as far as the administrative process is concerned. Notice that the notary was mentioned, your exhibits were mentioned, and putting it into the file. So, and that is in the event that you have not had a satisfactory remedy through your informal attempt to settle any matter that you have at hand. You want to make sure that everything is clear. All the law is put down. You're asking for them to rebut the law that you have put in your affidavit. All of your claims are substantiated. You were clear. You were not vague. There's nothing misleading. Everything is direct and to the point. You can explain to them exactly what you know by the law and request that they prove otherwise. And you can also request that they rebut each point in your affidavit, line by line, point by point, as was described to you for you in the documentation that I have put together and given to you. Okay. Now we're going to go on to another part of this administrative process, and you all sit tight. Okay.
If someone is deceitful in a contract and you are honest and give full disclosure, you have the right to be triumphant in court. So it's all about honor and dishonor. Offer and acceptance, making your wishes known on paper while being clear and expressed. The common law was our truth when this country was founded, and the right to contract is clearly spelled out in Article 1, Section 10 under powers forbidden to the states. Quote, the states are forbidden to pass any law impairing the obligation of contracts. So it is defined that we have a right to contract and the government cannot impair that right. Then again, in this Supreme Court case, it states, quote, the individual may stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen. He is entitled to carry on his private business in his own way. His power to contract is unlimited. He owes no such duty to the state since he receives nothing therefrom beyond the protection of his life and property. His rights are such as existed by the law of the land, long antecedent to the organization of the state, and that would be common law, and can only be taken from him by due process of law. That's under the Fifth Amendment and the 14th, and in accordance with the Constitution. Among his rights are a refusal to incriminate himself, that's the Fifth Amendment, and the immunity of himself and his property from arrest or seizure except under a warrant of the law. He owes nothing to the public so long as he does not trespass upon their rights. And that's a Supreme Court decision, Hale versus Henkel, 201 U.S. 43 in 1905. The next interesting aspect of contracts comes in the form of Roman civil law, which is administered through the Admiralty maritime jurisdictions and accepted everywhere as adopted in the Uniform Commercial Code, the UCC. Under Roman civil law, there are some major differences with common law. In it, it presumes many contracts exist in the form of a trust. Let's talk a little bit about trusts. In a trust, there have to be three entities named. A trust only comes into existence with the intention of the grantor, creator, settlor. The entity creating the trust is the creator or grantor or settlor. And notice the or at the end. They are the ones with the consideration or valuable assets or the money. The next player is the trustee. The trustee is the one accepting the position of making sure the trust is executed or carried out. The next player is the beneficiary. The beneficiary receives the gift of valuable assets from the settlor. So let's see how this would play out in real life. Grandpa's dying and he decides to create a trust to give his assets to his children and grandchildren. He draws up a trust agreement, which is nothing more than him producing evidence in written word, or it could be verbal, but that would be pretty weak, of his intention to place his property and possessions into a trust and have the bank president be a trustee, or he can have anybody else be a trustee, as long as the trustee isn't the beneficiary or the grantor. And the bank president's going to carry out his wishes, and then upon his death, say, within 90 days after his death, the trust would be executed, and X amount would go to son number one, X amount to son number two, and so on. He is named the settlor, or creator, as being John Doe, that would be Grandpa, and named the trustee as being the bank manager, and named the beneficiaries as being son number one, number two, etc., and named the terms of the trust. Now he has to get the bank manager to sign the trust agreement to get compliance of the manager as to his fiduciary responsibility. And if Grandpa was smart, he would give copies of the trust to a couple or all of the intended beneficiaries. The intended beneficiaries would then have a right to sue the trustee for failure to honor the trust agreement. Under Roman civil law, in a trust, the beneficiary doesn't have to know what's going on, and the government likes this deceitful aspect of trust agreement. Why? Because in a trust, if you receive a benefit, you are deemed in agreement to the terms of the trust, even though the terms were never made clear to you and you never agreed to them. An example of this would be a marriage license, where the state presumes you agreed to give over control of the product of your union, which would be your children. And that is why Child Protective Services can take your children, denying you your constitutional rights and due process. Due process means that you'd have a right to have a court case. And they can take your property without a court case first. Instead of taking you to court and then taking your children, they can take them first because you are presumed to have a trust agreement with the state, which is a corporation, wherein you have given up your constitutional rights, and as you have not claimed them in writing, you've lost them. So Roman civil law, where you agreed to become a 14th Amendment citizen, a subject of the United States Corporation, by lack of objecting to it, now makes you obey all the legislated laws that apply to the citizens of the corporation USA Incorporated. So we can see where if one doesn't object, then one agrees. This is a powerful process, and we can work it both ways. Up till now, the government and the corporations have been using this process against me because I did not know that there was any way to prevent their offers to take my property, etc. Now we will discuss ways of countering this process using the same process against them, and doing it in such a way that it will stand up in court. All documents you will be sent by proof of service and registered or certified mail to get evidence. Okay, this is an example of proof of service by mail. And in the upper left-hand corner, you're going to put the case number or the court number or whatever identifying thing you want to put up there to identify what it's in regards to. And then it's going to say proof of service by mail, documents served, 1, and you're going to list all the documents that you're mailing off on this day. And we're going to name them as notice of default, dated January 6th, 08, quote, declaration of John Doe, dated September 24th, 08, 3, affidavit of John Doe, dated September 02, 08, and then the service date, month, you're going to fill that in, and that's the date that you are putting this in the mail. So I'm putting it in the mail on January, and the day is 15-2009. I am over the age of 18 years old and not a party to this action. I am domiciled, that means I live at, 100 Sunnyside Lane in the city of Wonderland in the state of California. So you fill in what your address is, the person who's sending this, their address, and the city that they're sending it in. I enclosed the above-named documents in envelopes and mailed them with the United States Postal Service with the postage fully prepaid. And then you're going to add certified mail number and fill that in, or registered mail number and fill that in. The envelopes were addressed and mailed as follows. And then you're going to see. So, addressee. And then who are we sending it to? That's the addressee, the person who's receiving this. And in this case, it would be, let's say, the lawyers, Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe at 2200 Broadside Road at Take Your Stuff, California. Mailed from 100 Sunnyside Lane, Wonderland, California, and then your zip. Now, you could put mailed from the address of the post office if you want. I declare under penalty of perjury that the foregoing is true and correct, executed on, and that's the date that you're doing this, the person who's doing the proof of service is doing it, and then without prejudice, by, and then you're going to sign your name as the person who's doing the sending. Now, the person who's doing the sending has to not be a party to the case. So if it's your case, you're going to get somebody who's not a party to the case, and that can be just about anybody. I mean, it would be best if you could get the local nun to do it for you, because she's not going to be questioned. But your brother could do it, or anybody else who's not a party to the case. I mean, your wife might be a little suspect in that she's going to be a co-beneficiary if you win or lose. So you would like to get your neighbor or somebody else to do it. But remember, the person that you're going to get to do it, to be really powerful, you're going to have to call them as a witness in court.
Okay, there you have it. He's talking about adding your notice of fault to a certificate of service. Those documents are found inside Tahaka's Archive Master Library. But I'd like to listen to this guy's explanation of the administrative remedy, because it's all done on paper. Remember, the entire United States operates on a continuous series of contracts under what's called contract law. And you have the right, the United States Corporation cannot interfere with your right to make contract. Your identification can be as simple as an affidavit of identity with signatures and notarized with a notary stamp who has agreed and who has vouched for you as being the a man or woman that carries that particular identification. You can formulate your own identification. You can take a picture of yourself, put it on a piece of paper, sign it, get it notarized, and you have identification. There is nothing in America that says that you have to have a state-issue ID with your title on it in all capital letters as property of somebody. This is something that is masquerading as law. Every man have the right to leave his country and return to his country. That is your God-given right. Every man have a right to travel from place to place and from city to city and state to state and return to his place of domicile. That is your God-given right. But where people have gone wrong is they have not understood what their rights are. Therefore, they have not understood the law and the remedies that are available to them. Whenever somebody attempts to camouflage, in this case, public policy, which will be masquerading as law, you need evidence and facts and law. What do you want the judge to do? This is the time before you even do your administrative process to decide what do you want and what evidence you would need to support what you want. the judge in ABC's case or the judge in the removed case to review administrative process and issue an order confirming the facts contained in the notary's certificate of dishonor or certificate of breach or certificate of non-response, whichever is appropriate for the situation. Even you do not quote statutes. The notary's certificate is recognized as a prima facie evidence of the facts contained therein. Look at the commercial statutes for your state. The UCC source is 1-202, in parenthesis, O.C.GA.11-1-202. Since your administrative process will result in a certificate, this is the time to decide what you want. The one that sent the presentment to the straw man, put the horse in front of the cart, or you may find that your certificate did not contain the exact wording you want to use in the certificate. It cannot be changed after the fact because the notary could be accused of making legal determinations or practicing law. Do not put your notaries in jeopardy. Okay, now this takes a little practice, and what I highly recommend before you begin to use these particular remedies, study this stuff. Make sure you got it down to a science. And any type of document you send in anywhere should always be proofread. You should go over it over and over and over. Make sure that when it comes time, if you have to explain any of what you got on paper, you can do so. And the way you're able to do that is you have practice. Practice makes perfect. You're able to, for me, it's quite easy because I study this stuff, I teach this stuff, and I practice this stuff. And I've done this stuff over and over and over. The entire affidavit can be placed in the hands of the judge. He can question me on every last one of them points. And I can provide him with the facts involving law. Okay? So this is what we want to get. We got to get away from just thinking that we can do up a document, send it somewhere, and then wait for something to happen or expect something to happen. It don't work that way. You have to know what contract you're sending somewhere. You have to know about it. You want to learn about it. You want to read it over and over and over so that you can recite it without even looking at it. If somebody questions you about it, you can tell them about it. And this is with all of the documentation that you're sending. If you are going to send a document of non-response, what is it that you know about a document of non-response? What did it mean? What does it say? What is the law about it? Okay? And these may seem very, very simple documents, but you want to know about every last one of them. Okay? What gives you the right to send an affidavit of identity? What is an estate letter? What does it have the power to do? What are you doing with that? Okay? And these are the questions that you want to answer in your mind any time that you're dealing with any documentation to send anything to anybody. You don't want to get documentation from somewhere and look for somebody else to be responsible about it. It doesn't work that way. That's your baby. You need to learn everything that you need to know about any documentation that you're sending anywhere to anybody.
And they're going to be able to attest to the fact that they did send this. Most of the time it's not going to be necessary, but if it does become necessary, they're going to be your witness. So you have somebody else do it for you who's not a party to the case. And when you send this in certified mail and the post office proves that they delivered it, now the documents are, you know, judged delivered. Somebody has a hard time getting out of saying that I never received it or I received an empty folder, because the certified mail sticker shows that I did get it, but the document, there was nothing in the envelope that I got. It was empty. This way you have a witness to certify that there was something in the document. Most times you will submit an affidavit and a self-executing contract. And then the ball is in their court, and if they fail to respond, they lose. Documentation is everything. It is your proof that something was presented, and there was no rebuttal, or there was rebuttal, but it wasn't complete, and it didn't conform to the terms of the contract you sent. Go to the post office and 20 green certified mail stickers and 10 registered mail stickers. go to Costco and get a big box of envelopes and a box of 8 by 8.5 by 11 manila folders. You will need to make copies and have a computer and a printer. Costco has cheap printer scanners, or better yet, get a used HP laser copier. Each time you make a document up, you will have to go to make copies for your records. And as you will send the original wet ink signed documents to the court or to the opposition parties, you will have to get a friend who is not a party to the case to fill out the information on the proof of service and name the documents and put them in the mail. The friend can then be called as a witness to testify to providing the proof of service. Sending documents mailed to a disinterested third party by a disinterested third party and sent certified mail is a powerful tool to provide proof. You can go online to U.S. Postal Service, USPS.com/shipping/track and confirm to get a printout showing exactly when the documents were delivered. And then you have a person who swears they put your documents in the envelope, and you've got the U.S. Postal Service showing that they delivered the envelope. I don't know what they could say that they never got it at that point, but I'm sure they could try. So now let's give examples of the kind of things you can do to get administrative remedy. First, administrative remedy is different from court-judged remedy. You are going to settle your differences by getting some kind of agreement through letter writing. Let's use a traffic ticket as an example. First, I get a ticket for not coming to a complete stop at a stop sign. The policeman hands me the ticket. I sign the ticket with the wording, without prejudice, by:John Doe with U/D. Now, under the UCC, I have reserved all my common law rights and have not voluntarily entered into a contract to perform the, quote, I promise to appear in court, quote, because without prejudice reserves all your rights. If I don't appear, I can't be charged with a failure to appear, which is really a failure to rebut the accusation. Or, in other words, I am guilty by failing to speak. The judge can still order me to appear and answer the charges, but if he fails to do that, he technically has no case against me. Under the UCC, within 3 days or 72 hours, I can rescind any contract I volunteered into. So I'm going to send a copy, the yellow copy of the ticket, back to the court with the words, quote, refused for cause, written across the ticket diagonally on the ticket, per UCC 1-308. And then make a copy of this for my records. I will also include an affidavit stating that I, John Doe, sui juris, being duly sworn, do depose and say that, 1, I believe I have a right to travel in my personal car with guests as long as I am not engaged in commerce or being paid upon the public right-of-way, and I don't believe any evidence to the contrary exists. 2, the Constitution of the Republic of California states, the judicial power of this state is vested in the Supreme Court, Courts of Appeal, and Superior Courts, all of which are courts of record. 3, I believe a court of record is a judicial tribunal having attributes and exercising functions independently of the person of the magistrate, generally designed to hold it, and proceeding according to the course of common law, its acts and proceedings being enrolled for a perpetual memorial, Jones versus Jones. And this is off of Black's Law, page 426. And no evidence to the contrary exists. So what am I doing here? I'm making statements on an affidavit that are personal. This is what I believe, and this is my experience. And if for you to rebut that, for the court to rebut that, they're going to have to show evidence that it's not true. And if they fail to rebut that, then they lose, right? Because that's the rules of court. 5, I believe under common law, unless I have injured a flesh and blood party, I have no liability to any party and no evidence to the contrary exists. 6, I believe I have not injured any party in the matter of traffic ticket number 1283872, and none exist. That's just a fictitious number. 7, I believe I have the right to claim sovereignty as evidenced by the Supreme Court case that states, at the revolution, the sovereignty devolved on the people. And I continue to quote it, and then I say, and no evidence to the contrary exists. Furthermore, I say not, without prejudice, and assign my name to it and get it notarized, and then it's an affidavit. Then I have it notarized, which is what makes it an affidavit. In other words, a declaration of your experience or knowledge that has been sworn to and evidenced by the notary public. If you didn't notarize it, it would still be sworn testimony, but the notary is an agent of the Secretary of State's office, an official agent of the state. When the notary writes in their journal, that becomes recorded evidence, like if you went to the county recorder's office and recorded a deed to put it in the public record. Now let's discuss the conditional acceptance declaration. The other side has sent you a demand, request, or order, and we think of this as a new offer to contract from someone we are already in contract with. So it would be a dishonor to ignore it, and we would suffer the consequences of failure to speak. It would be a dishonor to argue about it, but it would be honorable to obey it, and it would be honorable to accept it upon certain conditions, or to do a conditional acceptance. Let's continue with the traffic ticket example. In addition to the affidavit, we will send a conditional acceptance that I would say, quote, I, John Doe, sui juris, accept your presentment ticket number such and such upon proof of claim that I am liable for this alleged action. Sui juris is a level of status, by the way. It declares you are over the age of majority, or 18 years, and of sound mind and can handle your own affairs as a free man or free woman. I will require the district attorney's office and or the Wonderland Superior Court to demonstrate the factual basis in law for any liability on my part to perform as the recipient of the noted ticket. Your failure to rebut my affidavit of John Doe point by point with factual evidence dated January 15, 2010, and this conditional acceptance point for point with the factual lawful evidence of liability within 21 calendar days from the time of receipt of this notice will be tacit agreement and silent acquiescence to the truth contained in said documents and result in the court and district attorney abandoning any claim in this matter and result in an estoppel against the court and the district attorney from proceeding in any action against John Doe or John Doe in all capital letters in this matter. Then sign it without prejudice by John Doe, authorized representative, and put a 3-cent stamp in the upper right-hand corner and sign your name through it and date it. Signing your name through the stamp cancels it and makes you the Postmaster General. The UPU is an international treaty that the United States is a signatory to and results in the contract coming into international jurisdiction and proves you, the signer, are a flesh and blood person, as corporations can't sign their names because they have no hands and they have no minds. So how could they sign across a stamp? Now get a proof of service and send this and the affidavit and the copy of your ticket off to the DA and a copy to the court, certified mail.
Okay. There you have it. There goes some more tricks of the trade. 3-cent stamp in the upper right-hand corner on that notice of fault and opportunity to cure, with your signature straight cross, it puts you into what? The Postmaster General's seat. Okay, very, very powerful tool. I have a better way and a better strategy because keep in mind the United States does not interfere with your right to make contract. Involving a ticket, the way I see this is, number one, if I have a right to travel, why should I continue to do all of this paperwork on ticket after ticket after ticket? Why don't we knock this bird in the head, get it out of the way, and put yourself in a much better light not to be stopped in the first place about no more tickets, period. And so in my case, what I did was created my own identification, my own contract, created my own a license plate, which was nothing more than a sheet of paper that had been laminated with words on it that I wanted to put on there. I had a man tell me one time, I had the words indigenous more. He says, that's not the way to spell indigenous. I said, what makes you think I'm trying to spell it? I'm not trying to spell it. I know exactly what I'm doing. Anyway, my next thing was to create an affidavit and send to the sheriff pointing out all of my right to travel, case after case after case, ruled upon by the United States Supreme Court. And I'm asking him to prove beyond any shadow of a doubt, point by point, line by line, and to rebut these points and show me which one of these Supreme Court justices is a liar. I'm also asking him to put me on a no-stop list, put my family members on a no-stop list, put their names in there, and so that he'll know these are members of my family, and we are not persons. We are people. We are the people. And I need him to rebut this affidavit. I've reserved all of my rights to seek damages in the amount that I am detained. I need $5,000. If I am handcuffed, I need an additional $5,000. If I am put in a cell that contains any metal or bars, I need an additional $5,000. If I am abducted, I need $5,000. If I am not taken to a magistrate's office to present my case, that's an additional $5,000. And we go ahead and get that baby signed and notarized and get it sent to him, certified mail with return receipt. We're giving him 30 days to respond. If you do not respond, then we're going to get that notice of default and an opportunity to cure, giving him an additional few days with him, send it to him, certified mail with return receipt. His office signed for it. Can't say he didn't get it. We got the green card back attached to our copy of any documentation if anything arises. Now we're officially ready to hit the pavement, so we can go out there on the pavement now, and we can find the popo, and we can go ahead on get in front of him and see how this baby going to work, and testify this thing, and see if he going to cut them lights on and get his boss sued, or is he going to back off and let you exercise your freedom of right to travel. In my case, in two separate incidents with not only my vehicle but a female friend of mine, the results were the same, no lights, no stop. Now, after that, doing that, you got to remember that it ain't no more fun after that. You know, you done beat the duck. So there's a ton of ways that you can go after this thing, and you can do it, but I don't believe in throwing pebbles and shooting slingshots. I'd rather just go ahead and get a double barrel and get it over with and knock it on out. That's the end of it. So, you know, stopping me, and I got to explain to you about this, that, and the other, and educate you, and do the certificate of service and all rights reserved on the ticket and all this right here. I don't have time for that. Don't stop me, period. If I got a right to travel, I don't put you on notice of the fact that I do, and I know I do. I need you to call me a liar. If you can't do it lawfully, we have a problem. Okay? End of story. That's how you do that. Now, let's go on to dealing with this presentment, and we're dealing with step two now. Prepare the certificate of non-response. If you have sent an affidavit, you followed it properly, if you have not gotten the return receipt back, then you can research this through the post office and get it and get all the information clearly showing that you sent a certified mail with return receipt. They did not respond in the appropriate time. If you give them 14 days on day 15, you need to send out the notice of default and opportunity to cure. If you gave them 30 days, you need to send out the notice of default and opportunity to cure on day 31. Okay, and I'll get this thing out there. Prepare the certificate of non-response. This is the notary's certificate. It is not yours. The notary will issue it to you. You will then be the holder of the certificate. It is like a bond in that it is evidence of the debt owed to you by the respondent who dishonored you by not responding or not complying with a duty. This certificate is three because it will be issued after the respondent has had two opportunities to honor you by complying with your request or performing a duty that you required of his office. His communications is not a response to your notice of acceptance and request or to a notary's notice of non-response. If it addresses some other issue, if his response is an argument or a testimony, he is in dishonor. What do you want the certificate to say? Now, before I go any further with this, I want you to pay attention to the response that I got back from the Transportation Security Administration. I've already recited to you about 5 or 6 points from the affidavit, clearly told you that I'm waiting on a response by what affidavit? Rebuttal what? Line by line and point by point. Okay, this is what came to me in the mail, regular mail. Thank you for your letter on July 11 regarding Transportation Security TSA procedures for travel document checking. Specifically, you state that your world government passport was not acceptable at the TSA screening checkpoint at Jacksonville International Airport. Now, first of all, I can stop right there, because first of all, this is not an affidavit. This is a letter. Second of all, it does not rebut any of the law that I put down in the documentation. So what's going to happen now? You guessed it. We're sending a notice of fault with opportunity to cure. We're going to take a copy of the letters that were sent and attach it, clearly showing that they did not honor the initial request. This is not an adequate response to the initial affidavit I sent. This is not a rebuttal to any of the facts presented in the initial affidavit I sent. We're giving them an additional 10 days. Perhaps they had misplaced the points that they were supposed to rebut. Perhaps they misunderstood the constitutional law. Perhaps, okay? If you used a bill of exchange, name of notary, name of presenter, name of acceptor, description of presentment, name of the accused, state commercial statute regarding notary certificate, ARS 47-3505 and 47-1202, and that's in Arizona. I live in Florida, so it'll be different numbers. Certificate statement, and so on and so forth. But I just want to get you familiar with the type of documentation and how you put this thing together and serve these people. And this is on the private and public side. We are using a lawful process called an administrative process, and we're looking for administrative remedy. In other words, we want to solve the problem before it ever hit a court, and we want evidence of the fact that we have used every lawful means at our disposal to get that done. So everything that you do, you send a copy to them, you send a copy to you. You make sure the dates and stuff is all there and everything is put in order, and you keep this information in your folder involving this particular case. So you don't have to go hunt for nothing and search for nothing. You simply pick up the file and open the file and review everything that you got. Everything should be in order. Every response that you get should be attached to the documentation involving that particular case. Keep it in a nutshell. And you should exhaust that administrative process all the way out to the end. But in every case, you're looking for settlement of the situation with any kind of information that you're sending them every single time. You're not answering anything that they're sending you. I'm not concerned about answering anything in this letter that they sent me. Number one, they did not honor my request. They are in dishonor. the initial affidavit still stands as truth because it has not been rebutted. Now, they responded to the affidavit, but they did not honor the request. There was no rebuttal of law. The only thing that they sent me was public policy. That ain't law. I need you to respond to the lawful claims and to rebut or refute the lawful claims. You did not do that. So, therefore, you are still remains in this office.
And wait 21 plus days and then print off a copy of track and confirm from the U.S. Postal Service site. Now, if they haven't responded fully and completely to as per your requirements, you can send in a notice of default and notice of estoppel. Once you have sent off the default and estoppel, they lawfully and legally cannot proceed against you as they have agreed to your contract. Simple. They're too busy to respond in the first place, and they don't want to let the cat out of the bag by explaining the system, how the system works to get you under contract, which would be you signed the driver's license, and as you signed the driver's license, you agreed to obey all the vehicle code laws, right? But do you think they really want to come out and tell you that? Because they didn't tell you that when you signed the license. They didn't expressly commit to you a full disclosure that if you signed up for the license, that you would have to obey all the vehicle code laws, and that, two, you didn't have to get the license because you weren't engaging in commercial activity, or that if you didn't engage in commercial activity, there was no requirement to get the license. See, that would be complete honesty. What they did was deceit. Once you have sent off the default and estoppel, they lawfully and legally cannot proceed against you as they have agreed to your contract. If you look up ticketslayer.com on the web, you will find a common law approach very similar that defeats traffic tickets. Now, when you go to court, you can show the judge the default and proof of mailings, and he has no legal choice but to dismiss. He may try to get you in contract and get you to agree to something, but if you stand firm on the fact that you want a dismissal based on the fact that they don't have a lawful cause of action against you. However, my experience is the courts do not follow the law, and I can provide many instances where they violate the written laws and do it knowingly. This process of conditional acceptance and affidavit can be used for mortgage foreclosures, credit card issues, suits against you of any kind. The concept is simple. He who fails to defend agrees. You would be surprised at the liability of making statements in writing and signed under full commercial liability is repulsive to public officials and bank presidents. They are not going to sign their name to anything, because if they sign their name to something, you can take them to court. Now let's talk about getting your documents into the public record for all to see. Believe it or not, the government is afraid of you and your ability to get your evidence into the record, and so has instructed the county recorder, for instance, to not record any affidavits of status or sovereignty or deeds where you state you are the sole owner of your property, even if you've paid for that, even if you've paid off that property entirely. I have had the court refuse to enter documents that are properly formatted into the record by stamping them and stamping my copy because they act as guardians of evidence. Once you get evidence in, they can't say you don't have it. But if they don't allow you to get your evidence in, they can go, hey, we never received anything. There is a way around the county recorder that refuses your documents, and it would be to send them off to Texas to the NationalRepublicRegistry.com. which is a place that will record your documents for all to see. Anybody that goes there can look at all the documents that are recorded there. So that's in the public record. As those guys will turn your documents into a PDF file and put it online for all to see and file stamp the documents and return your originals to you, and you can order certified copies if needed. Next, your court clerk who refuses to record your documents can sometimes be overcome by writing file on demand on the top of your court documents. If you write file on demand, they are forced to file it, although not in every case, because they can deny you your rights because they're the gatekeepers. But But they get themselves in a much trickier position once you know your rights and demand them. If you turn around and leave, they've won. But if you demand your rights, so write file on demand on the top of it. They have an obligation to file stamp them, and they are denied the right to make any legal determination of the validity of the filings, as are the county recorder's office. They can say that they're not in the proper form, and you should be willing to put them in a form that they accept, but they can't make a legal determination of whether you should be allowed to put those into the record or not. The next thing is to have at least one witness who doesn't speak during what you're doing and witnesses the interchange with the clerk, and have a voice recorder in your pocket is very helpful to transcribe the interchange later. You will ask the clerk to put it in writing that they have the authority to refuse putting your evidence into the record, and then sign it and date it. If they refuse, ask her to have a copy of the bond they were operating under, because all public officials are bonded. The head clerk of the court has a bond, and if he violates the terms of his job, his bond is revoked. Once his bond is revoked, he can no longer work for the county. The county recorder, the head clerk in the court, and the judges, etc., are all bonded. This is a public hazard bond whose sole purpose is to protect the public against unlawful actions on the part of the public servant. The public servant is required to show evidence of their bond, and if they have violated the terms of their job description, their bond can be awarded to cover damages to the public. In other words, you can sue them, and the money will be paid out of the bond. If they lose their bonding, they are unemployable by the state or county and get fired, as all employees have to be bonded. This is a big stick you can use against them to make sure they comply with doing their duty. I mean, they're public servants, after all. If you don't use documentation, you will have no evidence and you will not get satisfaction. Do not talk to anyone in the opposing side by telephone. If they call you up, chances are they have somebody else listening on the other side who's going to be a witness for them. And they're going to try to trick you. And on the phone, it's easy to be tricked into things. The opposition can have a second witness listening to the conversation, and oftentimes you will say things without thinking them out. This is a great tool to get you into contract or agreement without your voluntary agreement. If they call, simply say, quote, "I don't conduct any business on the phone, but I will respond to anything you send me in writing with a wet ink signature upon it," and hang up. When you get a letter, you can craft a thorough response to it, and you can think it over. The county supervisors are the employees of all county employers of all county employees, so sending them evidence of the recorder's or court clerk's violations and a letter demanding their policy that they show you where the recorder is authorized to deny your evidence being recorded. You can send a conditional acceptance affidavit to the county supervisors naming each individually in their personal capacity and see what kind of response you get, as they are unlikely to want to be sued or leaned for their employees' unlawful actions. As you can see, these administrative remedies can be achieved by typing and sending notices and don't require personal appearances. But even still, they are time-consuming. Consider that if each inhabitant of the city sent in one letter that required a response or would have consequences for the city, if they would be overwhelmed and could not function and would have to cede the fact that the people don't want the kind of actions the government is taking. The majority of inhabitants, notice I am not calling them citizens of the United States or residents, because those terms define subjects rather than sovereigns. I mean, if you're an inhabitant, that's different. But a resident is somebody who's staying in an area for a short period of time, like a doctor does his residency as a hospital. He's not going to stay there forever. It's not a long-term position. When he's over with his residency, he leaves. So you're not a resident, and you're not a citizen of the United States. Otherwise, if you want to claim that you're a citizen of the United States, then you're not sovereign, and you're subject to the rules of the United States. Or if you're sovereign, then you're not subject to being a citizen. You can choose to be a citizen when you want, because, hey, the king can choose to accept benefits or not. The public servants are like private masters when they deny you the fulfillment of your wishes, with no proof that they have the authority to do so, and without signing their name to their denial. It's like the 60s all over again. Question authority.
Okay, we're back. That's some very, very powerful information. I would like to commend a brother of mine out in Louisiana. The brother and I, we have been working on some things, and he have been dealing with a company that's been badgering him with harassing phone calls about a debt. And he has already sent out the initial affidavits. He has already got a printout of all the calls that have come into his home from this particular company, even after he sent them a letter telling them to please refrain from making any more calls to this particular number in regards to this particular account. So now he's in the process of collecting the calls that are continuously coming in at from $500 to $2,500 to $5,000 a pop. And I must say congratulations, brother. He looked forward now to the calls coming in. He has already gotten a copy of the Communications Practices Consumer Protection Act. And he's highlighted all the calls as they come in, and he continue to collect them. And he will be able to put the information together, send it to them, clearly showing they're in violation, and totally amount up with proof beyond any shadow of a doubt. And the best thing that they can do is contact the brother and make him an offer. Otherwise, if this is filed into the court, they're done. In every call, they're going to have to pay the total amount of it. So I'd like to commend my brother. Keep up the good work. Keep me posted. And you know who I'm talking about. The brother's right there in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And he's doing a wonderful job. I'm not going to call his name on here, but he always calls me and he keeps me abreast. And he's working this thing got it down to a science. And it won't be long before he can go ahead on and cash in on these harassing phone calls that's been coming to him about an alleged debt. Because in America, there is no money. Okay? All right. Now, we're going to go back, and but before I do, I want to say that the phone lines are now open. You can dial into this broadcast by dialing the number 310-982-4184. That's 310-982-4184. If you have a question, don't hesitate to raise your hand. I'll open up the line so you can get in.
Don't hesitate to raise your hand.
Air code 412.
So you can get in.
412. Cut off the speaker.
Okay, I'm going to hold on, Brother Tark. I have you on the internet.
Speaker.
Well, I had to turn my internet off. I have you on the internet and the phone. Hi,
oh,
how
okay.
are you?
Hey, Lisa. I'm fine. So
I have a question
on?
For you. I did all my administrative process and everything, and September 2nd, because those attorneys don't know the law, I'm summoned to court for a motion hearing. And my question to you, Brother Taharka, is when I go in there to get that dismissed with the information that you shared with me, what is the time frame to collect from them? I mean, is it going to take 6 more months, a year, or how does that work?
Well, it's based on what you are experiencing and what they're attempting to do. They'll use certain terminology because you got to keep in mind They're trying to do everything they can to mm-hmm. get their tail up out the ringer. But any time that you go in there, you're looking for a settlement and closure immediately,
right.
And you have to understand to try to sometimes they're using, well, all the time they're using tricky terminology in order to throw you off, but you have to object and look for closure of the matter. And even though you have won and you get closure, the next thing is going to be to collect. So the shortest way to deal with that is to immediately begin to send them documentation reminding them of the fact that they have lost, they owe you, pay me now. And you're going to formulate those documents and get that to them.
I did that.
We're going to use the same administrative process on them. If they do not respond, then now instead of going back to the court, because the court has already ruled they have lost, they got to pay, but they will attempt to, in a lot of cases, they will attempt to ignore you and this, that, and the other. So now you get a chance to go ahead and do up your UCC-1 financing liens, put that lien against them. Lien the house, lien the boat, lien the wife, lien the car, lien the jewelry, lien the teddy bear, lien the faucet, the sink, tub, toilet, lien it all. And get that
over
there. Get it up over
there
to them. Yeah, well, that's what you have to do to them. And then after you do that, now you have mm-hmm. proof, not only that the court has determined you a winner, but you also are showing that they are refusing to pay. So now we can go
uh-huh.
to the sheriff or the federal marshals, and we can put them on notice of the fact that we need to get them to go ahead on and get that U-Haul truck and back it on up over there, and
I have some other situations. Like I have a property that was given to me, and and you and I talked about this when my husband and I went over there, that somebody had changed the lock, and it took a couple months to find out who did it. And so when I found out, the poor man was so dumb, he gave me all the information voluntarily that I needed to sue him and four other companies. He told me the chain of command. He told me the chain of command in which they illegally sold the mortgage, and that mayor's mortgage fraud, that electronic mortgage fraud. And so I drew up all my affidavits for all five of them, and I called him back. I said, I need your address so I can send you these documents. He said, I live at the... And so I said, this man's a fool. He's a fool. I mean, he said, well, Lisa, it's going to be a while before I get back to you because I'm going on vacation. I said, uh-huh. Thank you very much and enjoy your vacation. And I sent all of my documents. So I have a couple more. Actually, this week, the 14 days expire, so I'll be sending number two to them. And nobody's responded. They're not going to, because they did some illegal selling of the mortgage without
uh-huh.
notification. And I've actually filed a police report on him because he went into my property and did not notify me. And I let him know in my documentation, if you go in again, I will send the police to your house. So I filed some case law on that in New York, where they awarded one homeowner $5,000 for the things that the guy took out illegally, property that he took out, and gave him $150 for punitive damages.
Okay.
And so, yeah, and so I included, I have that as part of my documentation, because they need to understand that they just can't keep doing things to folks. And I'm telling you, Target, like you said, the more you do it, the more professional you come at it, become. And I have done it with people that are calling me about debts that are 8 years old, And he actually sent me an email. One of the guys from NCO sent me an email asking me how much would I settle for before we go to court. So I'm waiting to hear from
well,
him.
That's the administrative remedy.
Oh, my goodness. The more I do it, the more fun I have because I know the end result. And like that excerpt you played said, they don't want to let the cat out of the bag. So they will willingly pay a few in order to keep the millions blind. And I'm
mm-hmm.
living proof. I mean, I started learning this with the end of March from you. And
mm-hmm.
this is my new job. I mean, this is my new job. Shoot, why do I have to go to work and make pennies and when I could get $6,000 in one check just for writing some letters?
There you go.
this is my new job. And I enjoy, when I'm drawing up my papers, brother, I enjoy looking at that stuff saying, oh, cha-ching. You know, I mean, they really are just doing a lot of illegal things, and learning that information from you, I'm just moving forward, and it's all just working out very nicely. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad it's working. You say you done turned it into a new job. You don't need
to
be employed.
It's a new job. I just got to wait for the cha-ching. I'm waiting for the cha-ching, and it's no longer a 9-to-5. This is my 9-to-5. I'm not kidding. Because they're always doing something. And even some of them that call, like T-Mobile with permissible purpose going into my credit without my permission, he called and said, oh, we're sorry. We'll give you a free month of phone service. I said, what? You violated two federal laws. What are you talking about, free month of phone service? I said, are you going to give me my money? He said, no. I said, well, I'll see you in court then. He said, have a good day. I said, you too, buddy.
They're going to call back, especially when you serve them. Once
crazy.
You serve them, they realize you're serious, you ain't playing.
Yeah, and I told him,
all
I said, do you really want to do this? Yeah. I asked him, I said, do you really want to do this? He said, I don't know. Yeah, I guess so. Oh, offer me $170. That's funny to me. So it's,
well,
it's
I had
just,
the same
it's,
Go ahead.
No, I said it's just enjoyable. I enjoy it. That's all. Well, go ahead.
Well, what we have to understand is these people make a living in fraud. The whole system, you know, you go to a check cashing place, and then you say, well, look, I want to get a check cashing card. And they say, well, here, you're going to have to fill out this application. And you fill it out, and most of us will fill it out without reading it. And then they say, well, I'm going to need a copy of your driver's license, state-issued ID, and I'm also going to need a copy of your Social Security card. And you had to stop right there. Wait a minute. Hold on. Social Security card. This is kind of illegal, isn't it? Well, if you don't have that identification, I can't issue. Are you sure? I'm positive because I know what my boss man told me. Okay, well, could I have his name and mailing address? Because we're finna get him right now. We
mm-hmm.
need at least $10,000 or $15,000 in damages for fraud. And go ahead and contact us and break us on off. And otherwise,
mm-hmm.
We're gonna carry on down there to the court, and we'll let the court prove to us that a Social Security card is a form of identification. A driver's license is an identification card. Either one, none of them ain't. So, sister, it's very, very simple. You don't ever have to run out of work because there's so much of, they're doing
yes.
so much of fraud, you always be employed.
That's the truth. And it's the truth. It's just pulling, just like I said, even with the, I have a collection company calling me, not calling me, they're sending me letters to Harker for a 25. I had that card when I was 20 years old. 25-year-old debt. And two different
mm-hmm.
companies are sending me something for the same bill. That lets you know they're committing fraud right there.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, now, you have to, when you send your document to them, It is a good idea to reserve your right, but also reserve the right to sue them in the event that they put anything on your credit report. So if you are sending out these documents to these people and you have this information contained in there, that's evidence that you have given them. At the end of the year, go ahead and pull a free credit report. Pull your free credit report and look on there and see how many of them owe you. How many of them owe you. And you can just take a copy of that, highlight it, and go ahead and formulate your affidavit and clearly show, and then show them where you had already previously sent it at. You can contact me for settlement in the amount of $25,000, $30,000 to make this thing go away. Otherwise, we're going inside the big house, and we're going to lay it down in front of the court, and they'll clearly see where you are. Done valid, you know.
Oh, man. So I just wanted to call and share that information with you, Brother Harker, because it's amazing. In 6 months, the things that I've learned and done just blows my mind.
Well, okay, Lisa, I certainly appreciate you calling in, and we ain't through yet with this administrative process, and I want the brothers and sisters to get this stuff down and stop running down there to them courts. Go ahead on and open up a can of whoop butt and go ahead and get that done, and then you can, you know, long before you ever get there, if you do it right, you get paid. You going on to get paid because these people are in violation. They're robbing you. They got all kind of scams going on. You have to make sure they pay you. And then eventually, if you do it good enough and long enough, the word will get out about you. And they'll be like, yeah, of course, it won't be no more fun there because everybody will be watching. Oh, don't say what nothing. Okay, sister. Thank you for calling in.
All right.
All right. Okay, Mose, the number to dial in is 310-982-4184. Go ahead and dial that number. I'll open up the lines and you can tell me what's on your mind. Okay?
Moving the burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Moneo Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the burden of debt. Hi, I'm Tahaka Amana El Bay. There's some very important things that we need to consider when dealing with police stops. First of all, does failure to wear a seatbelt constitute a breach of the peace? Is it a public nuisance? Is there an injured party? If a policeman stops you, is he an officer of the law? Has he taken a public oath of office? Is he a public official? Criminal impersonation in the first degree is a felony. In order to exercise your freedom of rights successfully, contact me, Tahaka Amana El Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now send an email to Hawker53@hotmail.com.
Okay, let's go back to dealing with this administrative process. And it says, notice that presentment was accepted and returned with attachments with a request to the presenter at his company, at its address, by certified mail with return receipt, and certificate of service, notice of non-response, with a second request. Okay, now, when we are dealing with the administrative process, What we are doing is we are simply going to our brother in an attempt to settle a matter without putting this in the hands of the court. And we want to be as professional as we can possibly be. We can use the law. We can use the law of the Supreme Court. We can use the constitutional law. We can use everything to our disposal. And we are looking for them to prove to us by their response, upon our request for their response in a certain matter, which is professionally. I mean, if you have sent them an affidavit and requested their response by affidavit, that is a legitimate request. And if they are refusing to do so, they are in dishonor. To the presenter at his company at his address by certified mail with return receipt and certificate of service, presenter refused request. Presenter did not send notice of dishonor. Presenter his dishonor. Presenter agreed. Now, that's automatically, if they do not respond to your information, they are automatically agreeing what you have sent to them. They are in agreement with that. So, therefore, it's time to move on to the next notice of default. If you've sent them the initial affidavit, the acceptor accepted the presentment. We know that because they returned the return receipt. If they did return the return receipt, they automatically are in agreement with what you sent them. The acceptor returned the presentment. The acceptor exchanged its exemption for discharge. The acceptor presented authorization to use his exemption for court charges. The acceptor sent process and instructions with the authorization. Okay, now, if you're accepting for value documentation, you might have to give a little education on that so they know. They can never say that you are accepted something for value for discharge and you did not give them instructions. They don't know what you're talking about because you were not vague. You gave them instructions of how to go about getting their money if they're claiming you owe them some. Or either if you're discharging a debt that the court is trying to force on you, or an attorney is trying to force on you. This is how you go about doing it. The acceptor sent a statement of account showing a zero balance. His refusal to send the confirmation or notice of dishonor did not negate settlement. He and his agency have no capacity to pursue collection. Further collection makes him and his agency liable for the $5,000 to the straw man. The straw man can secure its $5,000 claim. And you date, notary signature, notary seal, notary stamp, notary address, administrative process number. Okay? That is a number that you have attached to your presentment to these people. Okay? Now, we're going to be going on to another portion of this because now we have discovered the first part of this type of thing. We've sent the initial presentment. We've stated our case. We've laid it out. We've placed instructions for their compliance with what you have given them, and this is all lawful, and you're asking them to rebut the facts. You're asking them not only to rebut it or refute it, but you're asking them to do it line by line and to respond to your initial affidavit by affidavit. In other words, another affidavit, a letter in the mail talking about how they see it and all that right here, that's garbage. That's garbage. The same thing happened to me with my mortgage company when they got rid of the mortgage. They sent a big yellow envelope full of all the documents that I done signed, all of the account information. They even send some information saying that they made a mistake and it's not this amount, but it's a lesser amount. All of that was garbage. That was garbage because you have not satisfied not one single point of that affidavit I sent you. You have not rebutted none of the lawful facts. You didn't do none of that. Sending me a big fat envelope don't mean nothing. It's garbage. So I sent notice of fault. But by the time I got to the notice of fault, they must realize that they was in a no-win situation. After rereading and reading and reading the initial documents that I sent to them, they already knew that there's a goose cooking and it ain't none of me. So they go ahead and they send me a surrender, clearly saying that, stating that they will not be foreclosed and that the lien has been removed, and there's no need for any further response. It will be forwarded over to the county recorder's office for review, and the county recorder will verify the fact that that's a done deal, is over, finished, and done with. And that's how you do this thing. And you don't have to be jumping and shouting, hooping and hollering, and running through the house scared, and I got a ticket. You got to stop all that kind of business. You know, take these help people and deal with them. Okay, deal
when you
with
go
them.
To work, can a customer request you help them? Yes. What if you refuse? Can they request to get the manager? Yes. If you refuse to get the manager, then you as the employee have just made a management decision and can get yourself fired if the manager doesn't support your position. As manager, you're responsible for your actions. The customer can sue you for any injury that they sustain because of your actions and sue the manager and the owner, all under the respondent superior rule. They say that the owner is responsible for the actions of his subordinates. So are the county supervisors responsible for the county employees? Yeah. The correct response as employee is, I'll get the manager, or I'll get the owner, because it's really the owner's decision whether you should go ahead and do what the customer wants or not. The minute you take that away from the owner and make it your decision, you're responsible. When the clerk of the court or the clerk of the recorder's office denies you your wishes without getting their supervisor, then they are taking the responsibility, which is not theirs to take, because their superior, the named county recorder or the named clerk of the court, is the responsible one. They are making a legal determination which is against the law, and they are damaging you under your Declaration of Independent Rights to, quote, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. All men are created equal, and since we are all equal, by what authority can they claim you are injuring another by filing your paperwork unless it can be proved that it's fraudulent, such as a notarized deed of trust where the signature is a known forgery? By their act, they are asserting that they are more equal than you in status. Since they are in their public servant position and not their private sovereign capacity, they are lesser in status. They are actually there to serve you. This discussion of using paperwork to get agreement through conditional acceptance and affidavit is a powerful tool to use. To make it more powerful, one needs to get a notary involved. If the notary, who is an agent of the Secretary of State and as such an agent of the court, who is holding a higher position than the Attorney General in the state government, in other words, the Secretary of State, his authority is higher than the Attorney General's, sends the notice of conditional acceptance and affidavit, along with payment in the form of approved for value, the payment is what gives the notary the legal authority to send the paperwork in, and then note a lack of response by failure to set off the account and accept payment. Look into notary protest to see the requirements. Now an agent of the state has witnessed the lack of response or rebuttal to the documents, and it is entered as a default judgment equal to a judge's entry of default judgment. If you have to go to court and present this as evidence, it has to be admissible as public documents under the rules, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and the maker or notary doesn't have to testify. In other words, if you take a document that's entered into the public record, like something that has been recorded at the recorder's office, the recorder doesn't have to come down and testify that that's a public record. The fact that it's stamped from the recorder's office is enough. Well, since the notary is an agent of the Secretary of State, the fact that it's stamped with their seal is enough. Later in court, documentation like this is golden as it supports your diligence to keep good records and being truthful. Or, you know, a little overview of administrative remedy would be that you have to understand the concepts of actions that you take. When the IRS sends you a letter saying, "Dear taxpayer," they're establishing a presumption that you're a taxpayer. If you don't refute that and say, I accept your statement that I'm a taxpayer based on proof of claim, that you show me validated evidence that supports your opinion that I'm a taxpayer," because there's a court decision that says there's a difference between taxpayers and non-taxpayers, and the government doesn't deal with non-taxpayers. Well, if there's non-taxpayers, explain to me who those people would be, because I want to become one of them. So then if you can't establish the fact that I am a taxpayer, then I'm not a taxpayer, right? So now let's take a look at the difference between stating things that have some teeth and responsibility for the other side. Let's say you send a letter to the IRS and it's a declaration, because anytime you state something that I declare that I don't owe you any taxes because I don't think I should have to pay. If you were the IRS and you got a letter like that, what would you think? Hey, I can toss this in the garbage because, okay, you told me what your opinion was, but there was no consequences if I throw this in the garbage. So let's take it a step further. I don't believe that there's any law that makes me liable for paying taxes on my labor. And if you don't show me in a law, then I'm going to stop paying taxes on my labor. Aha, now we have a situation where there are consequences for me not showing you the law. Does it mean you're going to win? Not necessarily, but you have sent the letter in. They can argue that, well, let's see, did you send the letter in with a proof of service and certified mail? Okay, there's no way for you to prove that you actually sent this letter, so we can ignore it and claim that we never got it, if push comes to shove, right? I mean, they can say, hey, we never received your letter, and then what do you say? Oh, okay, well, I'll have to send you another one, right? Because maybe you didn't even make a copy of the letter to have as evidence. So it's all about evidence. If you are going to send letters, make copies of them for your records and get a file going with my letters to the DMV or my letters to the court or my letters to the mortgage company or the credit card company or my tenant if you own property. Whatever it is, you have to have some level of organization, and that organization involves record keeping, so that you can prove your case. If you are involved in a lawsuit, when you sue somebody, the initial serving of documents has to be done in person. You have to hire a process server, not a party to the case. It could be a friend of yours, but somebody who will swear that they tapped so-and-so on the shoulder and handed him the documents. Even if he didn't accept them and he dropped them on the paper, on the floor, you have a witness that said, I handed so-and-so the documents. After the initial serving, where somebody has served somebody in person, all the servings subsequent to that can be done by mail. And in most cases, you know, we don't sue other people, so we're not serving people in person. We're suing them and sending them, we've been sued. And in a counterclaim or in a situation where we've already been sued, all the documentation can be sent by mail. So all you have to do is mail off letters to them. You want to get yourself involved in a counterclaim because you want to become the plaintiff. So in an administrative thing, you are going to send documentation to them and say, you know, in the form of a counterclaim, I accept your lawsuit conditionally based on your proof of claim that you have a case against me, and I would like to see some evidence that you have a case against me, some proof. Let's say you're in a mortgage situation. I'll accept that I owe you money based on a proof of claim that you advanced any money to me in the first place, that you engaged in a lawful contract when the deed and the promissory note were signed, that you gave me full disclosure of what was going on when the deed and the promissory note were signed, that I have a debt owed to you, and you can substantiate that debt, and that based upon the fact that if I don't pay you, you will suffer a loss, and you can prove that you'll suffer a loss. You know, so you send that off, or you know, and that maybe that you have a copy of the original wet ink signed promissory note and deed of trust, and you send that off, and if they fail to respond, then they lose, right? Now, you would send that off with a proof of service, registered mail, and you would have a notary send it off, and the notary would be allowed to send it off if you made payment, and your payment would be approved for value. Approved for value is a whole other discussion.
Okay, we're back. Now, keep in mind that there is more than one way to skin this cat. First of all, he was mentioning about the mortgage company. First of all, he mentioned about the Internal Revenue Service. You can actually pick them apart, but you have to make sure that you have the law. And their job and what they will attempt to do, if by some hook or crook you find yourself in the courtroom, their only thing is, if you follow this administrative process correctly, the only thing that they are concerned about is keeping you from getting your evidence onto the record. Because once your evidence is onto the record, they are done. So you want to make sure that you clearly state for them your identity as a creditor. You know, in the mortgage situation, the child support situation, the student loan situation, it doesn't matter what kind of situation you're in, you are the creditor in the situation. If they start talking to you in some kind of mail about debt and all that, and because we already know any attempt for them to contact you by telephone, that's out. We don't talk to nobody about this kind of stuff on no telephone. No, sir. If they contact you by telephone, if they're harassing you, you can go ahead and take them out like I explained to you earlier. But if they attempt to deal with you on a mortgage or an Internal Revenue Service or the child support or whatever it is, you can make them just tell them, y'all hold on a minute before I agree to anything or answer anything. Hold on. So that I can hook up my recording devices so that I can record this call. It'll only take a moment if you just hold up. You discover that they'll be running for the hills trying to hang up the phone and get away from you. Because what they're doing is they are always attempting to get evidence and put you in the debtor situation. You have to make sure that you remain in the creditor situation. And in the case of a phone call, even swapper ain't no swindler. Because the first thing they do when they call you is they are, hello, are you so-and-so and so-and-so? Well, first of all, wait a minute. Who are you? Who are you to call me and ask me who I am? If you're calling me, you should already know who I am. Okay. And if you're calling me, get committed to answer a question about my identity because you sound like you got some authority in your voice? That don't mean nothing to me. Hold on a minute. Let me hook up my recording device. It's only going to take a second. Just hold on. You hear a dial tone in your ear because they're going to try to vacate that situation. But now, when it comes to the mortgage situation, the first thing that we have to understand is, number one, when it came to the signing, they did not give you an opportunity to examine everything before you signed it. They did not give you the big yellow envelope to take to your lawyer to go over and explain everything to you before you put your signature on it. So you did not have full disclosure. Okay? Then they told you that the bank would give you a loan after you signed all the documents. They gave you some documents. They picked out the ones that you're supposed to have. They kept all the ones that they're going to hang you with and give you a mortgage. And you take that to the bank. The bank is going to accept them. The bank is going to take them in the bank and come back with another set of documents for you to sign. But if you notice, the bank examiner don't put his signature on nothing because he's not the one being hung. It's you. But we don't pay these things attention. Then he congratulates you. Well, congratulations on your new house, and I hope everything worked out for you. Whoa, where is it located at? It's over there. It's a three-bedroom. It's yada, 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 yada. That's what we do. And we're just happy if we can be. Ooh, we almost about to get the house. We don't know that we're dealing with a hanging because you already own the house. You ain't no money. The bank ain't getting nothing. You gave your Social Security number, didn't you? You signed it, didn't it? All right. Well, it's paid for. So now that you done got hung up, now, what I would like to recommend for those of you who have a mortgage, understand this. If your mortgage is up to date, you ain't got no problem. Everything is fine. You paying from $700 to $3,500 a month for a mortgage that you agreed to have. You know, now's the time to start getting rid of it. Look up, go to Black Law Dictionary, look up the word mortgage. And within the many definitions for the word that they give you, one of the words will be lien. Now, what person in their right mind need a lien? I don't need no lien on nothing, ever, no time. It ain't nothing good about it. So, now's the time for you to get rid of that thing. You got a student loan? They told you that they're going to give you a loan. And we need you to sign here, put your Social Security number down up in there so we can access that that bond. That's the door to the bond. We go ahead on through that and, you know, pay for that, get that on the way. But we got a hanging going on. So, therefore, you go to school, you get miseducated and all this good stuff. And now it's time for us to bill you for the so-called loan we claim we gave you. But you ain't went to the bank with now check. There wasn't no silver and gold nowhere. No cash either. And you all worried about, I got to pay back this student loan. What student loan? When they gave you something, they gave you nothing. But a hard way of going, a short time to get there. And you worried about it. Child support, same stuff. It's in a letter. You all have been ordered to child support and name all the capital letters. You run through the house. Oh, Lord. Whoo, they got me. Whoo. Oh, man, it's funny to me. I had a situation with a sister once. And she called me. She said, these people, they're talking about suspending my driver's license. I said, you own a driver's license? Yeah, I got a driver's license. I said, you be driving? Yeah, I be driving. I said, well, who paying you to drive? I don't drive for a living. Nobody ain't paying me to drive. I said, well, let's start over. I said, you say the driver's license belong to you. Yeah, they mine. They talking about suspending them. I said, you scared? Yeah, because I need my driver's license. I said, well, do you have them with you? Yeah, I got them with me. Could you take them out and look on the back and read it to me and tell me what it say? She said, okay, hold on a minute. She went and got it and read it to me. And after a while, she said, you know what? I don't think this doesn't belong to me. I said, really, Sherlock? I said, what about the people that's paying you to drive? Nobody will be paying me to drive. I just be driving. I said, you do. I said, how could you be driving, and driving is in commerce, and the only people that's driving are people that are being paid to do so. I said, I said, you got dictionaries? Yeah. I said, let's look up the word travel. She said, okay. She went and got there and read it. She said, I'll be driving. I said, really, Sherlock? I said, you... We went on and on and on for a while, but eventually she understood. And she said, I'm finna go down here and get these people. I said, no, hold it, don't. You ain't ready for that yet. Let's deal with this from a whole different perspective, and let's deal with it differently. We don't have to argue or debate anybody. All we got to do is look up the law, understand the law, and use the law. That's all. And we're not badgering anybody. We're not being forceful. We're just simply asking questions. We're stating the facts, and we're asking for a conclusion to the facts. If I'm wrong, please provide proof of claim that I'm wrong. Please. You know, I'll be as kind as I can. I'll be as professional as I can. I'll be as punctual and as lawful as I can. I just need you to rebut the information that I'm presenting to you. Okay? We will continue in a minute. Keep in mind, the number to dial in is 310-982-4184. Go ahead and raise your hand, and I will open up the line so you can get in, okay?
Today's special is Memphis Soul Stew. We sell so much of this, people wonder what we put in it. We're going to tell you right now. Give me about a half a teacup of bass. Now I need a pound of fat back drums. Now give me 4 tablespoons of ballin' Memphis guitars. This gonna taste all right. Now just a little pinch of organ. Now give me a half a pint of horn. Place on the burner and bring to a boil. That's it right there. Now beat.
That there is no money after 1933 and HJR 192 went into existence. There is no money today, so therefore you can pay anything with a promise to pay. If you send somebody a check, that's a promise to pay. The assumption is that it comes from your bank account and you had to labor and give something of substance, which is your labor, which has a real value in exchange for those Federal Reserve notes, which have no value. However, a promise to pay can also be in the form of just your signature on a piece of paper saying, I promise to pay you. And they both have the same validity. So a proof of value is that I accept that I owe you money, and here's my promise to pay you. When am I going to pay you? Well, sometime in the future, but you can't hold me to it any more than I can hold you to it. In other words, you gave me a check for working for you, and I deposited it in the bank, and I got Federal Reserve notes. When am I going to get paid? Never, right? I'm never going to get paid. I accept that as payment until I don't accept it, you see. If I don't complain about it, then I've accepted it. And this is the whole process we're talking about here today, the whole concept. So I'm going to show you another instance of what goes on when you send off your conditional acceptance letter, which I like to call self-executing contracts. So this would be the last line in it. Failure to rebut each and every point in this self-executed contract in common law and my attached affidavit, affidavit of Jane Doe, see I've named it, within 30 calendar days, so I've named a time frame, after receipt thereof. And how can I prove receipt thereof? Because I have certified mail that shows that they received it, and I have a proof of service showing that somebody stuffed the documents in the letter or manila envelope that got sent off. With factual, verified, certified evidence sworn to in the form of a notarized affidavit. In other words, if you're not going to swear to it in the form of an affidavit, then I don't have to accept it because I put an affidavit in the record and signed with a wet ink signature by a flesh and blood woman under their full commercial liability. So I'm telling you, I'm going to sue you if you're committing fraud. Will be tacit admission and silent acquiescence to the truth of the statements made within these presented documents. Failure to provide a notarized affidavit as noted above within 30 calendar days after receipt thereof will cause the IRS, which is who I was happening to send this letter to be barred and stopped from taking any legal action against Jane Doe for any reason. And then, quote, silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. United States versus Tweel, 550 F. 2nd, 297. This is a court case from 1977. And in fact, this court case was an IRS court case. And then you're going to date it and sign it without prejudice by your signature and authorized representative underneath it. Now, if you were on the other end of the line and your attorney took a look at this, would he know that you mean business? You're serious. You're not leaving anything unsaid. You're accusing, and failure to respond is going to have consequences. Nobody's going to read that and go, ugh, I can ignore this. They're going to know that you mean business. So when they do ignore it and fail to respond, how do you put the clamp on? How do you finalize this process? How do you get more? You have to give somebody three chances, right? The rule of three. You have to give them three chances, and if they fail to respond three times, they're guilty. So this is the first letter. You're going to give them 30 days to respond. 21 days would be the minimum. You can give somebody 5 days to respond if it's something, just an answer to a question. But if you're asking for documentation, if you're asking for somebody to look up records and provide records or certified copies of records for you, you have to give them a minimum of 21 days. 30 days is reasonable. I mean, if you got something, you'd like to have 30 days to respond to it, and, you know, that's fair. So give them 30 days to respond. When they fail to respond, you're going to go online on Track and Confirm and look up and print off the fact of when they got it. And then 30 calendar days after the time they got it, you're going to give it an extra day, and you're going to send off a notice of default, an opportunity to cure. And in your notice of default and opportunity to cure, give them another 7 days to respond. Just say, you are now in default and you failed to answer, but I'm going to give you 7 more days to answer. You're going to send that off with a proof of service and certified mail. When they refuse to answer that, you're going to send them a third notice that's going to say notice of default and notice of estoppel. And in your notice of estoppel is a common law action that says you can no longer move forward. this matter is settled. You've lost the right to respond. And administratively, you've gone into agreement, right? So you've lost the right to respond. Now they have three notices. And if they don't respond to the first one, the second one, and the third one, they have, you know, nobody to cry on their shoulder about it. It's done. It's a done deal. Three notices. That's how you get them. But you have to be able to document it. You have to be able to do it by the book. And you have to do it in such a way that there is no coming back for them. They do this to you all the time. And you, once you understand what's going on, it's easy to see it. The credit card company will send you a letter saying that if you don't respond to this presentment, they won't call it a presentment, if you don't respond to this letter within 30 days, you will have agreed to the debt. Well, if you throw that letter in the garbage, then you have agreed to the debt by Neil Dissett, failure to speak. So you don't want to fail to speak, you want to object. Why don't you just send them a letter back saying, I owe you $0. You've just objected. And they, and the ball's back in their court, and they have to justify that you don't owe them $0. Pretty easy. So you could say, I conditionally accept that I owe you whatever the amount is based upon your proof of claim that that's true and that you would suffer a loss if I failed to pay you any more money. So you've put the ball back in their court, and now they have to come back and prove to you. And what they'll often do is they'll send you a stack of statements showing that you spent money. What they're not telling you is that you sent a promissory note to them when you first took out the application for the contract. You signed a unilateral contract wherein you put your signature on a contract that said you're applying for a credit card application for $10,000 maximum or something like that. They take your credit card application for $10,000, which has your name and your promise to pay, an amount, the $10,000, who's going to get the money, the credit card company, Chase Manhattan, and the date, because you've dated it, and that's a check. They deposit that check in their bank account, and now they have $10,000 to which to draw off of, and which is fine if you agree to it and you don't know what's going on. And, you know, our whole civilization would come to an end if everybody caught on to the fraud that's going on, because if nobody had to pay for anything and all you had to do was sign your name to something to pay for it, who would go to work? We'd all, you know, I mean, the whole country would fall apart. Nobody would go to work because we could just sign for everything. Hey, we need groceries, let's sign our name to it. We need a new car, let's sign our name to it. But the fact is that the guys on Wall Street know about this, and why do you think there's trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars floating around and somebody's just really, really rich? And the banks, like in 1929, are coming along and taking everybody's homes, even though they haven't lost a dime on loaning you money. And if you don't believe me, the test comes when you send them a letter to verify it. And once they start dancing around the issue and not answer your questions, you will understand that what I'm saying is true. And those that are in power are getting afraid of what's happening, because once the sleeping giant awakens, once the people start discovering what's really going on, they're going to get upset about it. Why shouldn't we? I mean, you got people that are working two and three jobs.
Okay. Now you know. So the thing is, it's, in my opinion, it's time for the sleeping giant to awaken. We don't have to worry about everybody catching on and everybody using their signature to pay for this and nobody working. We ain't got to worry about that. That's the last of my concerns. What we worried about, what we need to be concerned about and not anxious about, but aware of, is the fat cats that's been doing this to us for years, and we can jump on and get up in there and turn this thing around. Stop robbing me. You know, I can't even, you cannot think when you're a burden with debt. I need to make you aware of the fact that you're not burdened with the debt. You can do something about the situation that you think you in. And when you remove the burden of debt from you, you have peace of mind. And there is nothing, in my opinion, there's nothing on this planet that can beat having peace of mind. To go to sleep and wake up and to know that you are not burdened with debt. You don't have that problem anymore. You did a little bit of thinking. You did a little bit of writing. Reading, writing, and a ripple tick on a piece of paper in the story. That's done. They done. And when you are able to function this way, then you can go on with the business of being creative. There's a lot of us all over the United States. We have talents and skills and stuff that we were born with that nobody don't even know about because we're so busy making a living to pay what we think is the bills and stuff, and then at the same time, we think we're doing the right thing. You got a mortgage, you got a three-car garage, and you going to work every day, you're slaving and sweating, and you got to take your children to a daycare and let somebody else raise them, and you think you're doing the right thing. You going one way at 6 o'clock in the morning to be to work at 7 o'clock, you got to dodge traffic, you're scared. Because you look at the speedometer, you got to slow down, you got to be over here, you got to find your pocket space, you're running late, you got to run in there, try to hurry up and get to the clock and punch in, and then you're going somewhere that you don't want to be, and you're going to do something that you don't want to do, and at the end of the week, they're going to give you a piece of paper, and on the back of that piece of paper, which is the private side, remember, the front of it is the public, the back is the private, you're going to put your signature on what you think is a line. But if you get a magnifying glass and you look at that line, it's not a line at all. It's simply saying authorized representative, don't take my word for it, take your magnifying glass and look at it. They gave you a piece of paper, and you got to hurry up when you get off on Friday. You got to run over there to the bank. You got to stand in the line. It's 99 degrees in the shade. You're sitting in your car with the teller line so that you can get up there and deposit that check in the bank, a piece of paper. And you think you're living. And if you take and count up the amount of time, I'll tell you what you do. Do what you do. Let's determine whether we're living or not. Count up the time that it took you to get up in the morning and go to work. Write down the time you left. Write down the time you leave. Write down the time that you get up and sit on the edge of the bed and sit there for a minute. And your wife arguing with you about you need to get on up. You get up, you sit there every morning, you need to get on up. You know, then you write down that time, go in there, take your shower, brush your teeth. And then you look in the refrigerator, and what you thought you were going to eat for breakfast ain't in there because you didn't stop by the store yesterday. You forgot, but you still hungry, but you ain't got time to mess around. So you're going to jump in the shower, take your shower, shave, bathe, and you're going to put on your pants and put on your shirt because you're in a hurry. And until you get outside under the light and you discover that you got your shirt on the wrong side, and then you had to take that off and put it back on the right side and jump in the car and you make a beeline to work. Now, you know you ain't running late because you pass that green Chevrolet turning up on the expressway every morning. But now you know doggone well you running late when you run into the red Ford. You're running late. So now you got to start speeding. You got a driver license, which is the property of somebody else because you think you're driving, and then you ain't nobody paying you to do it. But nevertheless, you get to the job, and you run in. You got all these excuses made up, And you got the supervisor looking at you crazy and looking at his watch and all this right here. And then you got to rush in there and really get it going. And then they got to write you up about all that there. And but then you want to write down the time that you arrived. Okay. Write down the time when you start working and when you stop working, it's time to go home. Write that time down. And then if it's on Friday, write down the time after you get off of work and had to go to the bank. Now, we done got super smart and we think we got it going on because I have direct deposit. Whoop-de-doo. Direct deposit of what? That's my question. Direct deposit of what? Okay, so now Friday, you done put that piece of paper in there, you done signed on the authorized representative thing that you thought was a line. And you done gave it to the clerk done deposited into the account. You're able to get online and look up and know how much money you got. But you got to hurry up because Saturday coming. And you got to, you know, you got to really get down. You don't want to, you done already lost half of Friday. You know, you got plans and stuff and all this stuff going on. And you're trying to, you're about to run over people on the highway trying to get to the bank or trying to get home from the bank and all this to try to call yourself living. But you're burdened down with this debt. You in a rut. You steady getting up in the morning, shower, shave, make a beeline to work. When you get to work, you get a coffee break, lunch break, and another coffee break, and then you off from work, you make a beeline home, and then you're going round and round in a circle. And at the end of the year, you made $75,000 to $80,000, but at the end of the year, you made the same thing that you made the year before that. And you made the same thing you made the year before that. There's something wrong with the equation. You think you're making progress, you're getting older by the minute, but ain't nothing changing for you. But you think you're living. You got to change the circumstances. You got to turn this thing around. You got to use your head. You got to remove the burden of debt. If you're going to go to work, it should be going to work because you want to, not because you got to. And the only way you're going to do that is you're going to have to start thinking. If you're going to make some investments in something, you got acres of diamonds right there in your own hand. If you're a skilled carpenter, why not work for yourself? If you're a plumber, why not start working for you? So you can determine when you go to work and when you don't go to work. And then not only are you living on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but you living on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. That's living. And it's all right there in your head. All you got to do is change your mind. And when you change your mind, then you got it going on. All it takes is a little bit of research. If you decide that, okay, I'm tired of this. Baby, me and you, we got to get ourselves together. You going to work over here to your job. I'm going to work over here to another different side of town on my job. We're going in two different directions. We got somebody else raising our children. We got people that we don't even know nothing about at a daycare with our children, and we calling ourselves living. We think we living. Something wrong with that equation. And we have to change our mind. Now, let's take a look at the government. Let's take a look at the courts and see what's going on with that business. And when we come back, then we can go on and finish doing what we're doing. I want you to take a look at this, okay?
Okay, we're doing another show of Sovereign or Slave, my favorite topic. And tonight I'm going to talk about the courts are not the government and have no authority over you. These are arguments to present as evidence. I know it's hard to believe. Anyway, when you are charged with any crime, and the definition of crime is a violation of public policy, public policy, not a trespass. A trespass is somebody violated your rights. You know, they hit you with a baseball bat. That's a trespass. A crime is a violation of public policy. So if there's no public policy that if somebody hits you with a baseball bat, then they didn't do anything wrong. They didn't commit a crime, let's put it that way. Interesting, huh? The first thing to do is to do a debt validation or order to show cause in the form of a conditional acceptance. The maxims of law are always true. That's what a maxim of law is. It's something that's always true. Such as, he who does not deny admits, or an unrebutted affidavit stands as truth. And the system of justice is built around honor and dishonor. When you receive a presentment, document, or instrument making a claim on you, like CPS wants to take your children, or you got a traffic ticket, or you violated a penal code, drunk in public, whatever, you would be in dishonor if you did not, if you failed to answer it, and you'll receive a default judgment. If you fail to show up at court, it's a default judgment. Usually the officer has you sign a promise to appear, right? So if you sign a promise to appear and you don't appear, you failed to honor your obligations. So don't be in dishonor and question the charge or debt owed instead. In the simplest form, it would be making a photocopy of the original presentment, traffic ticket, court summons, notice of default, like in a foreclosure, and writing in red pen diagonally across it, refused for cause, per UCC 1-308. Then qualify your signature by putting without prejudice. This retains all your rights, and without it, you lose your rights. Then, by, colon, to the left of your signature, and then your signature. And below your signature, put authorized representative, because you're the authorized representative of John Doe in all capital letters. I mean, usually you get the presentment in the name of your straw man fiction, the all capital letter name of your normal name. If your all capital letter name is on the presentment, i.e. John H. Doe, then it is an ens legis legal fiction, not a living soul, and you are the authorized representative of that corporate fiction. I mean, who else is going to stand in and say that that is their name? After all, you have a credit card, a driver's license, a bank account. You get letters from the IRS, from property tax, from your cell phone. They're all addressed to the all caps name. They're never addressed in your upper and lowercase name. And so they expect you to be the representative of that name and to pay for the things that that name is responsible for. And if you look at UCC 3-402, it shows that the authorized representative is not liable for the party that you're signing on behalf of, i.e. John Doe in all capital letters. So to show you how this would work out and the reason for this, let's say that you're Bank of America. On the signature line, it says Bank of America, and the person signing is really the representative of Bank of America, because Bank of America is a corporate fiction, right? It doesn't really exist. It's not a living soul. It's a dead estate. Because it's a dead estate, it has no sign, it has no hands to sign, so therefore it could not sign itself up as John Doe. So it has to have a representative sign. So somebody's going to sign as the representative of Chase Manhattan or Bank of America. Now, do you think that the CEO of Bank of America wants to be responsible for all the things that Bank of America does? No. So let's just take a look and see what UCC 3-402 says. Now here we can read it. UCC 3-402, signature by the representative. If a person acting or purporting to act as a representative signs an instrument by signing either the name of the representative person or the name of the signer, the represented person is bound by the signature. In other words, Bank of America is bound by the signature. The person who signs for Bank of America isn't bound. And in the same way, your all caps name is bound for the signature, but you, the signer, are not bound. To the same extent that the represented person would be bound if the signature were on a simple contract. If the represented person is bound, the signature of the representative is the authorized signature of the represented person, and the represented person is liable on the instrument. the represented person. In other words, the all capital letter name Bank of America is the one responsible, whether or not identified in the instrument. So we go down to here. If the form of the signature shows unambiguously, what would unambiguously be? How about if you actually state authorized representative next to the signature? That's pretty unambiguous. Then the signature is made on behalf of the represented person who is identified in the instrument. So if your traffic ticket is for John H. Doe in all capital letters and you sign as the authorized representative John Doe, the representative is not liable. Get that? Not liable on the instrument. Of course, who's going to actually tell you that? I don't think they're going to tell you that anyway. Get a friend or neighbor or anyone who's not a party to the case that is not named or someone who will be called as a witness to fill out a proof of service by mail and put your response in the letter and mail it back first class if it isn't that important. Certified mail and include the certified mail number in the proof of service if it's more important. And if it's a very important case, then the best form of evidence at a court case would be to get a green signature card, where when you send it certified mail, the person who's receiving it will sign a green signature card and they'll mail it back to you. And now you have evidence of acceptance on their part. They signed for it, so they received it and they accepted it. Of course, they don't have to accept it. They could mail it back to you and not accept it. If it's really, really important, send it registered mail with a green card. Registered mail is a form of mail that's in the private side, and it's more like from an international source to another international source, whereas certified mail is through the post office, and the post office is a private company. It's a private for-profit corporation. It's not actually part of the United States government, or let's put it this way, not part of the de jure United States government. Next, always try and find a living soul who has a proven responsibility, like the CEO or the board member or the chief. You know, call them up and ask who's in charge of the office. Get an actual name of a living soul to send your presentment to, i.e., look up the CEO of the bank who was foreclosing, or the judge's name, or the clerk of the court's name. Just call up the court and ask who is the chief executive officer of the court, and they'll tell you. And then send it to them, like, you know, to Mary Rowe, and don't put chief executive officer of the court, just put her name, you know, Mary Rowe, care of C/O, care of the address or the business address where they're operating from. That way your contract is going to the living soul, care of the address, and not the fictional court or the bank, the fictional bank, the fictional state, etc., and remains on the private side in the real world and not in the fictional world, because the fictional world is the public side of life, and it's like Alice in Wonderland there. They are then personally responsible because the court, which is a corporate business, cannot be sent to jail. Only living souls can be sent to jail and have liability. The statement, quote, refused for cause is a counterclaim, as they made a claim and you are countering their claim, saying you refuse to contract with them unless they can show cause why you have a liability. Under the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution, United States Constitution, you have the right in any criminal case to know the nature and cause of the action against you.
Okay, we're back. Now, I want to deal with one more thing here. And, well, in fact, no, I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to say this right here. When you get ready to, because there's something going on now inside the United States where they're attempting to stop people from filing anything. They got, boy, look here, they got the little headhunters out there at the clerk's office, and you coming there, and they take a look at you, and you tell them you want to file it. Well, we are not authorized to file. We need you to show us the law where we authorized to file this, that, and that. No. What you do when you get you walk up in there, you have a smile on your face, and ask for the clerk. And when the clerk come in, be glad to see him, and just say, hey, my name is Tahaka, and your name? Well, my name is Bob Williams. Okay. Bob Williams, okay. Well, Bob, this is why I'm here. I need you to, I need to file these documents. And, well, we're not authorized to. I have to take a look at it. And they'll come back to you. I'm not authorized. Well, at this point, what do you have? You got Bob Williams. By law, Bob Williams got to file a document. If Bob Williams ain't doing it, then Bob Williams is liable. So what we're going to do, we got Bob Williams. The first thing we did, we get Bob Williams just through a simple greeting. We just need to know who you are. I'm glad to see you. This wonderful dress you got on, Margaret Anderson. Oh, I like your hair, Janice Anderson, Janice Williams. Go get that first. That's your ammunition first. In the event somebody tried to obstruct you from filing your documents into the court, because see what is happening now is the judges and prosecuting all these people, the sleeping giant is waking up, and so they are committing what's called obstruction of justice. All we need is a head to put in a noose about it, and so use what's called tact and skill in dealing with these people. When you go down there, you know you're finna drop a bomb. You know there's no way out. You know you done everything right. But let's get past the gatekeepers, because they you know, and these I had a sister tell me that these people they have meetings about stopping you from filing stuff. And they have keywords to look out for. If you hear the word sovereign or something like that, we don't even use that. But nevertheless, their job is to start sniffing out anything where the people would have some authority, or the people would be able to get what they want on behalf of the people who are running this scam and robbing people. Now, also, you want to keep in mind that in any situation involving your city or your state, you want to go over to YouTube and look up the CAFRA accounts. Look up the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports. You can call for an audit of the CAFRA accounts. If you go to my website, newdebtelimination.com, and you scroll down there on the home page, you'll see a video there. And you can listen to that until it's over about the affidavits. And you can also, when it's over, you can see all the other little screens that come up. And if you check this guy out, you can look at his videos on dealing with the CAFRA accounts. And because these people, they're robbing us, and they have millions and millions and billions of dollars in surplus that they are steady investing and making money and coming up with all kind of plans. The children have money. The grandchildren got this, that, and the other. And they have a stranglehold on the public. And we just working our little fingers to the bone. We running and hooping and hollering and trying to do everything that we can to try to survive this thing. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. And when your back is up against the wall, in order to get it off, you're gonna have to do something about it. You're gonna have to come up out that corner, you know. And so we're gonna have to start doing this stuff now. If you notice, your checks always say, pay to the order of, instead of saying so-and-so. It don't say pay so-and-so, because that means that we're in the public. That means that you finna deal with a man. Now, we got to say pay to the order of. And then as long as it say pay to the order of, you turn it over, it had to be endorsed. And the so-called line that you think you're putting your name on simply says authorized representative. They got it, boy, look, and they got it going on all across the country. They got it going on your paycheck, checks you write, all that. You look on the back of a money order, the same thing. That, boy, that system. But we think that all of this is right. We have to come to a point of right or wrong. We can go along with the system if we want to. But you got to understand that a system that's created by someone is designed to benefit the people that created the system, not you. You can be a subject. You can be in the game. But what we need to do is we need to start establishing a game of our own, being followers and start being leaders. We got to take responsibility for our livelihood, take responsibility for our home and our income. We got to start owning our own companies and creating our own business. For those of you who like to have a little business for yourself and you start on for yourself, go over to newdebtelimination.com. You look up top, you see own your own business, and give me a call. And that's a wonderful little opportunity. It's set up where you can network, you can expand it, make it as big as you want to be, and all of that is available to you right there. So for those of you who want to get started and start changing things in your life, because you can go to work 365 days a year for another man, but you're going to only be making them rich. And one of the saddest things that I've ever seen was a woman that worked for the company that I had worked for. We was working for a bread company. And this woman worked until she retired. I mean, she had worked in there all her life. And they gave her a little banquet and gave her a little gift or gave her a little food. And she went home. And but the next day, she died. She spent her whole life and she had... I gave a little speech. She said, I've been here since I was 16 years old, and this company has helped me a lot. I paid my bills, and I paid my, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, baby. You know, I mean, you spent your whole life in here. I mean, we would work 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 hours a day, 13 hours a day. I went in at 7 o'clock in the morning, didn't leave out until 11:15 at night. This is how hard I used to work on that thing. And but I was there on a mission, though. It was a little bit different because I was only accumulating seed capital for investment, and I was able to successfully abort the trap. And but here's a lady that worked all her life. She spent her whole life making somebody else rich, making a living. She never got on with the business of living. Never did live. Never lived. She thought she was living now. Don't get me wrong. Because we got people who been working, 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 working. And every blue moon, you might see them on a Saturday. And they're proud of themselves. Man, I'm glad to see you, man. Man, well, you doing good. They think they're living. No, they ain't. Because the people they're working for is really living. They're over there in Spain. They travel to Africa. They got two or three Winnebagoes. The children go to the finest colleges. They go to sleep, stay asleep all day long to take the money off and all that. They living. We only think we living. So we got to get on with the business of living because the Creator has given every last one of us a span of time, a 24 hours in a day. It's what you do with your time to determine what your future will be like. You can spend 6 months to a year in planning and strategic planning and getting ready for the rest of your life. And you can launch your plan. And you and your wife and your family, because our family is business and business is family, y'all can get on and create your own business so that you can get on with the business of living and stop dealing with the imitation of thinking that you're living while you're making another man rich. Learning law, removing yourself from the burden of debt, that's just part of it. Once you get that out of the way, now you got seed capital for investment. All you got to do is decide what you're going to invest in. Once you started making some investments, and you can investment in the stock, you can come up with another little business. You might want to own a store. Whatever it is that you got a passion for, you can do your thing, and you can get on with the business of living. And it's nothing like not living under the threat of fear. If I don't go to work, I ain't gonna get the bills paid and all that. Man, you got to get out. You got to get away from that type of thinking. You got to get on with the business of freedom. You gotta be free. I mean, this country is a beautiful country. I have traveled across the land. I have seen, and I come to the conclusion, I say, ain't no way in the world that the Creator made this beautiful land for some people and not for all people. So it's left up to us. We're going to have to determine what the remainder of our life is going to be like. Or we can continue letting somebody else determine how much food you can buy, what kind of clothes you can buy, how long you're going to spend off from work, how much you're going to pay for your car, where you're going to go on vacation, and how long you're going to stay. Somebody else is determining that if you're working for somebody else. There's only two types of families on the planet, the have-mores and the wish-mores. Now, which family are you going to be part of? Are you going to be a part of the wish-mores? A lot of people actually believe, well, you know, we come from a history of people, hard workers. Working for who? That's good. But who are you working for? Are you working for you or are you working for somebody else? That's the decision that you got to make. I mean, you can be a hard worker, but work for you. Lord knows I work. I work, boy, I get up 2 o'clock in the morning to go to work because my passion is helping my people change their circumstances. And sometimes I work all day long, 2 o'clock in the morning, until I just fall asleep and have to take a nap. And then the phone rang and raked me back up again. But I got to go back to work. But I love what I do. And I'm the boss. I don't go on and punch no clock for nobody. I had to drive nowhere. And somebody determined for me what time I go to lunch and when I'm going to put something in my body. And if I decided, wait a minute, I'm tired of this, I'm going to lunch. Nah. Then I'm going to get fired. Come on, man. We got to get up out of this type of thinking. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and until next time,
don't mean to step on nobody's foot, but
on you.